Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Dan Bernstein Show. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
The main thing that I think with this environment is that you don't want guys sitting around a visiting clubhouse all day. You know, a lot of guys, we've had buses since 1 o'clock coming here. And so I just don't want my players sitting in indoors and, you know, with all that we're dealing with right now, it just makes a lot of sense to, the sooner we can make a decision on if we think we can play the game or not, the better. I think MLB is on board with that as well. We're trying to limit just the indoor time.
That's David Ross, and that's smart. Wouldn't it be nice if in their 113 pages, MLB had some kind of policy or some kind of thought about that? Because people together in a room, that's how people are catching COVID. Density of population, amount of time spent in recirculated air, that's how you're getting the viral load. That's what you need to avoid. And baseball's kind of like, oh, well, okay, yeah, I guess we'll figure it out. I mean, if it takes a tweet from Anthony Rizzo to make that work, more power to it. But there's big picture MLB stuff to talk about and baseball to talk about with Joe Sheehan, who is on Twitter at @Joe_Sheehan. He of Sports Illustrated. And I always mention, too, if you're not receiving the Joe Sheehan newsletter, you're really missing out. I mean, you can read his work at Baseball America and SI, but the good stuff is in the subscription newsletter that is absolutely well worth your time and money and attention. And he joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. How are you hanging in, Joe?
My editors at SI and BA will be happy to know that the good stuff is in the newsletter.
Well, I mean, you're afforded more space and as many characters as you like, as many words as you like. So I appreciate it that way. When you're your own editor, that's what I consider it the good stuff. Anyway, what's baseball doing now? Where are we here? And with more postponements today, and certainly more to come. And as we sort of amateur contact trace this is not pretty.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how the Cardinals ended up in a strip club in Atlanta, because I was told that would be the only way.
You know, Joe, we're having a little problem with your connection here. I think we're going to try to get a connection reestablished here because it seems a little bit distant there on the way we have it set up right now. So we're going to try to get Joe hooked up and reconnected, and we will do that. And here, I think we've got Joe back on the line. All right, so you were saying.
Yeah, Dan. Like I said, after the Marlins incident, there was all this blaming the Marlins fest. So I'm trying to figure out how the Cardinals ended up in a strip club in Atlanta, because that's apparently the only way you can catch the virus. I think we're learning that the problem isn't, and I've said this all along, the problem isn't baseball players and their behavior. It's trying to do this in the United States of America in the summer of 2020. The background spread of the virus is going to make it very hard to send 900 baseball players flying around the country for 3 months without having this happen. So, you know, we'll see if this spreads with the Cardinals. You know, the Cardinals, of course, played the Twins this week. The Twins are playing the Indians. All of this gets complicated in a hurry. As I said the other day, and I know a lot of people don't want to hear this, I don't think baseball should be pulling this off. I think the risk, not just to the players, but to everybody the players come in contact with, is too great for the benefit that they're getting. So they seem like they're going to muddle through. It certainly seems to me at this point, Dan, that MLB has made up its mind that short of, you know, literally a half dozen teams being wiped out or, you know, something truly tragic happening, that they're going to find a way to get to the playoffs.
And we keep thinking about how what we don't see And what we don't see is an asymptomatic player who came down with it because of travel. And like when I say amateur contact tracing, too, I'm also thinking, you know, frighteningly of we don't know who got it from whom, who got it from whom, who got it from whom, and how many people might somewhere end up dead because baseball is deciding to do what it's doing. But it's not an insignificant number, and it's not theoretical, because the testing lags are such that we're not able to really know who's getting it from whom and how far it's spreading. And I know we want our baseball, and I'm watching it, and I'm enjoying it, and I'm glad baseball's back, but I still kind of feel bad.
That's where I'm at. Last weekend, I really kind of threw myself into it, and I forgot how much I missed the game. Watching basically baseball for three straight days and go back three and a half, go back to Thursday night, it was nice. And then, of course, you wake up Monday morning. We knew on Sunday that the Marlins had some positive test. You find out Monday morning it's a breakout, and like, oh, wait, that's right. That's a reminder of what we're trying to do here. And this is one of the arguments I made when we were deciding whether to play or not. You know, everybody wants to say, oh, we'll get baseball back and things will be normal. And it was never going to be normal. It was going to be this. And it was like this in July. I mean, throughout July, every day we'd hear about some positive test and some player, or, you know, some player is not available today, but the manager isn't going to say why, because we're treating this differently. So it's not the, you know, blissful, fun trip back into our normal lives. It's kind of just another reminder that we're living through a pandemic. I'm like you. I'm thinking less of the players, and I don't mean to say that I'm not thinking of the players, but the players have made the choice to play, or they've opted out, and they are very well compensated for that choice. I'm concerned with, you know, there was a Philadelphia clubhouse guy, a visiting clubhouse guy, who doesn't make $500,000 a year minimum. It's people like that. It's a bus driver. It's a flight attendant on a plane. It's somebody who delivers meals. It's all of the people that are being exposed to increased risk who aren't necessarily as well compensated for that risk.
Meanwhile, there's been some pitching performances. It seems like every morning I wake up and there's been somebody who's dealing. Shane Bieber has been insane through two games. I was watching Sonny Gray look tremendous. We saw Kyle Hendricks in his first outing was great. Lucas Giolito was good. Max Fried putting up numbers. It does seem that even though we were thinking of a time when maybe starting pitching is going to matter less and less, there have been some guys just throwing it.
Well, yeah, the top end of starting pitching was never going to go away. You talk about the use of openers or tandem guys, pulling guys after two times around the order. But the top end is still ace-like. We saw, like I said, opening night, Kyle Hendricks. In a moment where we didn't think anybody was going to go seven innings, eight innings, much less a complete game, Kyle Hendricks goes out and nearly throws a Maddux, throws a 103-pitch shutout, is fantastic. And you mentioned some of the other starts. Bieber last night, I don't know how much of that you got to see. I saw a bunch of it. And you talk about a guy not with, you know, Bieber has B-plus stuff, A-minus stuff. He doesn't have that overwhelming Scherzer, Verlander type of stuff. But you talk about a guy who, like Hendricks, has that exceptional command and control. And it just really was a pleasure to watch him carve up the Twins last night. The top end of starting pitching does seem to be ahead of the hitters. If you look at the league right now, the league's hitting 230. It's got the highest strikeout rate in baseball history. It's got the lowest batting average on balls in play since 1992. So, I mean, I thought coming in the pitchers would be ahead of hitters just because it's easier to train as a pitcher without games. I mean, hitting, you can do all the sim games and exhibition games you want. It's not quite the same. Whereas a pitcher throwing in a bullpen, pitcher throwing in that type of environment, can work on his stuff more easily.
I was looking at some of the StatCast numbers for White Sox rookie outfielder Luis Robert. And any way you want to do this, if you want to do the eye test when he's running over to straightaway right field to stand in front of Larry Garcia and make a routine play, despite the fact that, you know, he was the center fielder, and the home run numbers, the launch angle, the exit velocities, the one that really just jumped off the page to me, sprint speed of 30.1 feet per second. So this is a guy with the body of a Greek god who runs like Billy Hamilton.
And I think the fun part about Robert is that they've given him the job, and he doesn't have to hit. There's a Byron Buxton thing here, like where if he were to be a disappointing hitter, say he has the year, you know, Jimenez had last year, hit 240, hits a bunch of homers, doesn't do a whole lot else, he's going to be a plus center fielder, so that you could just live with that. You know, the Kelly Leak stuff in the outfield's kind of fun to watch, but I mean, just a tremendous, tremendous athlete. For all this concern about, oh, baseball's not getting the best athletes anymore, Luis Robert, who, you know, certainly at Cuba, not an American youth, but still, to watch him play is a ton of fun. He's certainly been one of the highlights of the early going here. And, you know, one of the reasons you can kind of forget about everything is going on is because you get to watch a Luis Robert every night.
And people are bickering about Ricky Renteria's lineups and where Robert is batting. And I was talking with Matthew Trueblood of Baseball Perspectives just a couple days ago, and we're all in the wilderness when it comes to analyzing this. And essentially, you've made the point where we can't even really try, and we just have to sit back and watch it, and whatever it is, it is. But I've never been a lineupista, and we know the numbers on how lineups matter or not. But when each game counts for the equivalent of 2.7, and you got a finite number of at-bats to get these guys, I kind of think, you know, I'd like to see Nicky Delmonico not bat fourth. I'd like to see Luis Robert higher in the order.
Yeah, that's happened twice. I guess once, actually. Looks like Encarnacion hit the cleanup one of the days. I don't know. You look at the six guys ahead of him most days. I mean, should you hit him ahead of Eloy? Maybe. I don't think I want to hit him ahead of Grandal because Grandal's got all that OBP. I want the OBP hit in front of Robert at this point because he's still a batting average slugging guy who's not going to walk a ton. So I don't know. I mean, you know, if Tim Anderson isn't last year's Tim Anderson, should Robert be hitting leadoff? Maybe. I think six games into the season is a little early to start flipping the lamp. And I understand it's a 60-game season, but you know, baseball's still baseball. It's not, you know, six times 2.7 games. It's still just six games, 20 at-bats, what have you.
Yeah, I guess I'm of two minds in that regard, because I always preach patience, 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 and then part of me just kind of starts to panic and say, well, screw that. Like, I'm like, I don't know where you are in the Craig Kimbrel situation, where the more I look at the numbers, the more I look at the data and the performance, I would pull the plug on Craig Kimbrel, yet I know the Cubs won't.
You're talking to the guy who wasn't going to sign, who signing Kimbrel was a mistake. So if Rowan Wick or Jeremy Jeffress gets the next save chance, and let it be Rowan Wick because I touted him last mm-hmm. week, I think that's the way to go. And this is interesting because there's an organizational investment in Kimbrel, but David Ross has no investment in Kimbrel. Madden wanted the capital C closer. That's one of the reasons he got signed last year. Madden's not there anymore. I don't think Ross has a whole lot of reason to stick with Craig Kimbrel. And you know, I made this point. Kimbrel in his first year with the Red Sox was fantastic. But the 2 years before that, you saw some decline. And since the one great year with the Red Sox, he's been in decline. I don't think there's any reason to let him take down your 60-game season. Not because – and this is different because I think we're talking about an actual change in skill set. Like Luis Robert, we don't necessarily know what he is. If he is a true talent 350 hitter, yes, he should be hitting higher in the lineup. But I can look at Craig Kimbrel and say, this isn't the guy on the cereal box. This is a completely different pitcher from the one who was on a Hall of Fame track, and you have to treat him that way.
I looked at some of the numbers from last year, small sample, but of all, there were 545 pitchers with 20 or more innings pitched. And as far as inducing soft contact, his number of 7.7% ranked 544th out of 545. And his 50% hard contact rate was 540th out of 545. And that was last year. That was, and like you say, the decline was in evidence. So he said, okay, I'll go more with my curveball. He threw 15 curveballs in his last outing and didn't induce a swing. Not one person swung at his curveball. And I will say, when you ask what is David Ross's investment, Ross was one of the guys the Cubs sent to scout him and report. They sent one longtime scout whose name I can't recall right now, and they sent David Ross. And at the press conference when he was signed, Theo Epstein specifically said David Ross reported back to us that the ball was coming out of his hand great and everything looked good. So there is that investment.
Okay, and I'll buy that as something Ross saw a year and change, or I guess a year, a little more than a year ago. But I don't think he's going to let Craig Kimbrel take down his first 60-game season as a manager, and I don't think he should. You mentioned all that hard contact. I mean, you can make a case. This is an exaggeration, but let me go with it, that Craig Kimbrel killed the Cubs season last year. You look at that last season, you look at that series against the Cardinals. I mean, he had some bad outings, he started to look good, and then that ridiculous weekend series against the Cardinals, they lose the 4 one-run games. A couple of them are in Kimbrel, and the Cubs end up, you know, missing the playoffs entirely. I don't think you can let Craig Kimbrel take down a second straight season.
Christian Yelich is finally headed home. They're not going to be able to play today, but perhaps tomorrow, depending on circumstances. And I want to say he's one for his first 25. I think among qualified players, he's last in wins above replacement right now. Do you see anything fundamentally wrong, or is this just a bad start to the season for him?
At least I don't get to stretch these muscles too often. I'm gonna be the caller. That Yelich guy, he got the big money, he got the big contract, and now he's not gonna hit it all. Am I doing this right?
Yeah, that's a little starter kit. I think that's pretty good.
I needed the New York accent. I was trying to do a Midwest accent, but no. I mean, Yelich is gonna be fine. It's one for 20. There's nothing fundamentally wrong with Christian Yelich. I think again, I'm giving, and I wrote this a couple weeks ago. I think you got to give everybody a pass this year. I mean, you got to make decisions, but you know. Craig Kimbrell, I'm basically talking about him in the context of, you know, a three-year stretch here. Christian Yelich was, I think somebody wrote this recently, maybe the best player in baseball the last 2 years, even better than Trout. I'm not worrying about Christian Yelich. A lot of these guys are going to handle the weird, you know, spring training, then not playing for 4 months, then playing. And yeah, how do you evaluate any Philly at this point? You're playing. You're not playing. You're playing for 3 days. Now you're not playing for a week. It's going to be just a screwed-up season for just about everybody. I think we've got to give a lot of guys a pass.
And then Joe Kelly gets an 8-game rip for that? I mean, I thought that was draconian.
I thought there were two things in play. One is that Kelly has a history. I want to say he'd eaten a 6-game suspension a couple years back, known for the temper. Forget the faces and the mouthing off, but you know he does have a history. I looked at the 3-0 to Bregman, and I was trying to find a way to go, you know, this is a guy who doesn't have great command, doesn't have great control. And the more I looked at it, the more I'm comfortable with the fact that it was intentional. The one thing I was worried about is that you don't really want to walk the leadoff guy or hit the leadoff guy. So from a baseball context, it didn't make a whole lot of sense, but I'm convinced it was intentional. I'm somebody who wants this out of the game completely. I'd suspend these guys for 15, 20 games if it's intentional. This should not be a part of baseball. I don't want to hear the speech about Bob Gibson. This shouldn't be a part of the game. These guys throw 95, 96, 97 out of the hand. You can kill somebody with that. I'm sorry. We got to get this out of the game. So the fact that it's 8 games, yeah, I was surprised. I do think baseball also wants to send a message here. They don't want to do this for the next 8 weeks. They don't want guys coming up to the Astros and trying to drill Altuve and trying to drill Bregman and having to do this all the time. By suspending Kelly on the first incident for 8 games, they hopefully send that message.
I heard Chris Bryant saying this is sort of like college baseball now, where it's a high level, it's intense, but there's so few people in the stands that so much is audible. And it isn't just what we're hearing as viewers, despite some of the pumped-in phony sound. It's they're hearing everything that's said in other dugouts. And I'm wondering how that changes the dynamic a little bit, that they're trying to sort of make their own energy in these games. That's what Ian Happ was saying. And the Cubs have been doing a really good job of it, frankly, and it's been kind of infectious. With a lot of the, I hate to use that term today, but the cutaways that they've been showing of guys enjoying themselves. But we don't think of major leaguers being too concerned about what's being said about them by opponents. But that was some juicy stuff, at least, between Dodgers and Astros.
Yeah, and this is also one of the reasons I wasn't dunking on guys for the behavior. We saw a lot of high-fiving, a lot of player interaction this weekend. And after the Marlins story broke, there was a lot of, you know, social distancing shaming coming out. But you said the key point. These guys are having to create their own energy. I mean, even if you go to a Marlins-Rays game or, you know, Detroit-Kansas City at the end of September, there's some people in the stands. There's some cheering happening. And to have to go to this environment that's completely artificial, that's completely empty, I do think that, you know, baseball's not football, where you've got to get yourself completely amped up all the time, but you need a certain energy level. These guys do feed off the crowd feedback, or even on the road, you feed off, you know, quieting a crowd. So I think that they have to do some of this, and to say that, okay, not only do you have to play in front of no crowd in this really weird environment with all these other things breaking up your routine, but now you also have to treat your teammates as if they're infectious. And I think we got to be careful about how high a standard we hold these guys to.
Another thing that Matt Trueblood said was that he was waiting for Rob Arthur to actually get enough of swings and enough data to know which ball we're using. And I guess that should be soon, right? We should be able to tell by ball flight if it's the regular season ball of last year, the playoff ball, right?
Rob actually released a piece today about the way baseball sorts for race when it assigns players to positions. I know he's been working on that. That's a great piece. It's actually free at Baseball Prospectus today. People should check that out. And I believe Rob said on Twitter the next thing he was going to be working on was the baseball. I looked at some numbers, not the StatCast you know, drag type numbers that Rob does, but you look at the output numbers, and offense on contact is definitely down. Home runs on contact, extra base hits on contact, batting average on balls in play. So I'll be curious to see what Rob comes up with in terms of, because remember, he was the first guy last year. His yep. stuff stabilizes very quickly. You can know a week into the season what's going on with the baseball. So I would imagine he'll work on that and have something for us next week.
Joe, continued good health, man. Thank you.
Take care, Dan.
That is Joe Sheehan of Baseball Prospectus, Sports Illustrated, and the Joe Sheehan newsletter, to which you should be subscribing if you're a conscientious and informed baseball fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.